I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today's Friday, April 5th. Ooh, my granddaughter's birthday. I got to give her a call. Anyway, committee members present today, Vice Chair Dyson, Senators French and Machiki, as well as myself, Senator Giesel. Senator Faircloth and Senator Bishop are both in Senate Finances, and I believe Senator McGuire will be along shortly. We have three items on our agenda today, HB 99, Extend Alaska Minerals Commission, then the governor's appointees to the Board of Game, and lastly, SB 96, oil and gas only leases. So we'll start out with HB 99, Extend Minerals Commission, and Representative Sadler is the sponsor of this bill, so please come forward, Representative, and present the bill to us.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. This is my lucky chair, so I'll choose the left side. Good afternoon, and thank you to the members of the Senate Resources Committee for hearing the HB 99 for the record. Dan Sadler, Representative of House District 12. House Bill 99 helps to ensure the growth and the sustainability of a vital sector of the Alaskan economy, that being the minerals development and mining sector. It does so by extending the sunset of the Alaska Minerals Commission for 10 years. The Alaska Minerals Commission was established by our legislature in 1986 and since has been reauthorized four times. It's responsible for identifying roadblocks to mineral development in Alaska and for making recommendations to the governor and the legislature on how to clear those impediments. It meets three times a year in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and in Juneau, where commissioners deliver their annual report in the Capitol during the first 10 days of our session. Since its last reauthorization in 2003, the Minerals Commission has made several key recommendations which the legislature has since implemented or is working now to put into place. These include, but are not limited to, reforming the state permitting process to make them more timely and efficient, funding infrastructure development under the Roads to Resources program, and asserting and defending public access to roads, trails, and navigable waterways. The Commission is a proven and, if you check out the fiscal notes, a rather affordable voice for an important sector of our state's economy. Mining employs 4,500 Alaskans and provides more than $620 million in direct and indirect payroll. Mining also provides jobs and revenue for local governments in rural areas of the state that sorely need them. This bill, House Bill 99, started out, Madam Chair, as a simple extension bill, but now provides for three-year terms and a limit of two consecutive terms, and also provides for the annual election of a chair and vice chair of the commission. I appreciate your time and attention. I'd be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Sadler. Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, I see that there are some folks that have called in to testify on the bill. Two folks at the Anchorage LIO. We'll start with Deantha Crockett.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Deantha Crockett. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. AMA is a statewide association representing the six large metal mines in the state, our one operating coal mine, lots of exploration projects, and hundreds of placer miners, as well as contractors, engineering firms, anybody that really does business with the mining industry is who we represent. We do vigorously support HB 99. The Minerals Commission works very closely with my association and other resource development organizations to identify ways to promote the industry and eliminate barriers that we can see. I know in your packets and on basis there is a letter from the Department of Commerce that has a list of the accomplishments of the commission over the years. And if you take a look at that, you'll see that they really have come up with and been an integral part of decisions that are recommended to the legislature and to the governor to help our industry succeed. It's a really important commission. I think it's a very small fiscal note on behalf of our state. And it really does a lot for my industry, which I would be remiss if I didn't remind you is our second largest industry. We have a very, very high employment level in the state with a very high wage of $100,000 average that employs about residents from about 120 communities around the state. So we really do have a far-reaching impact, and things like the Minerals Commission help our industry greatly. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions, and I hope you guys will pass HB 99. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crockett. Any questions for Ms. Crockett? All right, seeing none, I'll let the record reflect that Senator McGuire has just joined us. Marliana Hall, you are also online.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Giesel and members of the committee. My name is Marliana Hall. I'm a projects coordinator for the Resource Development Council. RDC is a membership-funded statewide business association representing forestry, oil and gas, mining, tourism, and the fishing industry. RDC supports passage of the committee substitute, HB 99. As you've heard, historically, the mining industry has been a cornerstone of Alaska's economy. Many roads, stocks, and other infrastructure throughout Alaska were originally constructed to serve the mining industry. RDC believes the commission provides a necessary voice for issues as well as recommendations and mitigation ideas for the state of Alaska's mineral prospect and projects. This appointed group makes recommendations to the legislature and the governor in an effort to promote Alaska's minerals and mineral exploration and development industry. The commission continues to be an effective means of ensuring policymakers have the benefit of the collective input of lead practitioners in this industry. Mining, consisting of exploration, development, and production in Alaska, provides, as Representative Sadler and Ms. Crockett have said, thousands of direct and indirect jobs with a large payroll of about $620 million. CSHB 99 has incorporated term limits for commission members and term limits for members selected as chair and vice chair. RDC believes these proposed term limits will help keep a fresh perspective on the mineral industry. This bill will bring the Alaska Minerals Commission into line with other boards and commissions and extend it for another 10 years and help keep the members fresh and active in identifying ways to mitigate constraints on mineral development in Alaska. The Minerals Commission has a relatively low fiscal impact, and RDC believes it has a significant impact promoting Alaska's minerals and mineral exploration development. The 11 members of the commission have broad-based mineral industry expertise and represent a diverse expertise in mineral exploration and development. RDC urges you to pass HB 99 out of the Senate resources in a timely manner, and we thank you for your consideration of our comments.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Questions for Ms. Hall? All right. Seeing none on the off-net, Mr. Bill Jeffress is on the off-net. Mr. Jeffress, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, Senator Geisel, Chairman. I'm just available for questions, but I am the chairman of the Minerals Commission at this time.
Great. If you would go ahead and give your testimony.
I didn't have any testimony. I was just going to be available for questioning.
All right. Great. Any questions for Mr. Jeffress? All right. Seeing none. Any closing? Oh. All right. Yes, and we do have the Division of Economic Development in the room for any questions. Looks like there's no questions, though. Any closing remarks, Representative Sadler?
We just say we have 7 operating mines in the state, and the prospects are good for 6 more, and maybe potentially many more in the future. We do need to diversify our economy, and I think resources are our future as well as our past, and the Minerals Commission would help us achieve that for the future.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move HB 99 from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will pass from this committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents. Call Senate Resources back to order. The next item on our agenda is the governor's appointments to the Board of Game. And we will start, the first person in my stack of names, there's only two, but is Mr. Peter Probasco. Mr. Probasco, are you online?
I'm online, yes. Thank you.
Well, welcome. If you would just give us, identify yourself for the record, and then tell us about your qualifications, your interest in, I believe this is a reappointment, am I correct?
Yes, I was finishing out a term on the board. I've only been to three board meetings. I started in January, my first board meeting, and met three times. I found it very interesting and very challenging, and also a good way to become much more informed about the great state of Alaska. I've been in Alaska now. This is my second time. I came back in 1966, and I've been here in the valley ever since. I did a tour on Elmendorf in the late 50s. I grew up on a farm in north central Minnesota, and I grew up hunting and fishing and trapping, and came by it very naturally, and I've done that very extensively in the state of Alaska. The only ruminant animal in Alaska that I haven't harvested is a goat, and I probably won't try to do that anymore. But I am very interested in conservation and what our Constitution lays out that we're supposed to follow, and deliberation on our recommendations. And I look forward to being on the board another term, if that's possible. I think I'll learn much more about our state. I have four children, two sons. Both of them are hunters and fish, and done extensively in the state. I have six grandsons, and I've had the opportunity to hunt with all six of them when they were successful in a big game hunt. So I'm very interested. I think it's a great future. I think we have much to do, though, yet in the business of game management, but it's there, the challenges, and I think the process we follow is one of the best in the nation.
Very good. Thank you. Committee members, questions for Mr. Probasco? Senator French?
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I just think, for the record, I don't think Mr. Probasco, I think, was appointed about a year ago, but he hasn't appeared in front of us or been appointed or been confirmed by the legislature.
That's correct.
First confirmation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure.
Okay.
Great. Mr. Probasco, maybe you can just tell me a little bit about some of the cases that have come, some of the more interesting cases that you've taken up in the last year on the Board of Game.
Well, probably one of the more interesting challenges we face is intensive management. There's many concerns from both sides of the issue on that. I think it's an opportunity to increase the potential for harvest of certain game species that are very important to many people in Alaska, and coming to a resolution, coming forward with a plan that's going to work. The first meeting I was at was in Sitka, and we took up the issue there on some of the islands, and we set it forth and considered it again when we were here in Wasilla, and then again in Kenai, and finally finalized the program that staff of Board of Game came forward with as to intensive management. Many issues and many things we don't really know. Weather plays such a big role in what happens to the deer population in those islands in southeastern Alaska, and the role that wolves play in decimating the numbers during those times is also not well established. So the plan to come up with something that we could establish some baselines, at least in part of the area, has been very significant, I think. Big challenge.
Senator French, follow-up?
Just to follow, and thank you. And Mr. Probasco, you've got a really interesting resume, wide array of background activities and interests. But just tell me, how when you're taking up a question like intensive management, how do you balance the needs and desires of Alaskans who like to look at animals, who like to photograph animals like wolves and bears? How do they fit into the equation when you're thinking about authorizing some intensive management to perhaps eradicate some wolves or eradicate bears from an area that you think may be eating too many big game animals like caribou and moose?
Well, in most of the area that we were looking at, going back specifically to those large islands in southeastern, there's very little game viewing going on. There is, of course, up at Denali, it's an important thing for tourism up there to be able to view wolves. But it's a rarity in Alaska. You can spend a lot of time in the wilds of Alaska, and you will very rarely be able to observe wolves. I've hunted for 48 years in Alaska, and I think I've seen wolves in the wild four or five times only. So not a very significant thing. And, of course, our issue is not to eliminate the wolves. It's to bring the number back under control so not only the wolf population stays healthy, but so that, in southeastern, the deer population stays healthy. And, of course, in Unit 13 here in central Alaska, we wanted a very healthy moose population and caribou population. And to bring the wolves somewhat in balance there was very significant.
And just last question.
Thank you.
Just last question. Thanks, Madam Chair. And I think those are good distinctions. But when you get closer to, for example, Denali National Park, you raise that issue, and the buffer zone that has been there in the past is not there now. How do you balance off intensive management and the wolf pack around Denali National Park?
Well, the park is not involved much in intensive management. In fact, as I see it, and I need much more study on the issue. But the park system doesn't get involved extensively in any kind of management. And so there are issues probably with the management of the park and management on the part of the state of Alaska, and also set forth in the Land Claims Act that came in recent years as to how it should be managed. So there's much to be done in resolving so that we can go forward with the parks and the state both in the management of the wolf population.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Probasco. Senator Dyson also has some...
No, I don't.
Oh, your question has been answered. All right, thank you. Further questions for Mr. Probasco? All right, I've got, 6 folks online who wish to testify on this appointment. So these folks are either at LIOs or off-net. So we'll take that testimony now. For those of you that will be testifying, I'm going to limit you to 2 minutes, please. And if you would start out identifying yourself and any affiliation that you have with an organization or whatever. And I will also note that if you wish to send in any of your comments as email hard copy, we'd be happy to connect them with the record. We'll start out with Al Barrett, who is at the Fairbanks LIO. Mr. Barrett, can you hear us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly. Go ahead.
For the record, my name's Al Barrett. I'll be representing the Fairbanks Advisory Committee. I'm the vice chair of that committee, and we've gotten to watch Mr. Probasco for the last 3 meetings. And from what we heard and what he's put on the record and the decisions that he's made, we feel that he'd be a good board game member. We like the interaction that he has and the approachability he has at the meetings and the open-mindedness to at least listen to subjects at hand. And we ask that you confirm Mr. Probasco to the Board of Game. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, going to Kodiak, it looks like these 3 folks are at the LIO. We'll start with Dick Rohrer. Mr. Rohrer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dick Rohrer. A longtime resident of Kodiak, was formerly a member of the Kodiak Advisory Committee for many years, and have had lots of opportunity over the years to represent them in front of the Board of Game. More recently, I was able to be at Sitka at the first meeting that Mr. Probasco attended as a board member, and I was impressed with his performance there. He was pretty quiet, which I would expect of a first-time board member, learning the issues. I heard him ask some intelligent questions. He was approachable during the breaks. There was nothing specific on the agenda that I was there to address, but I felt that Mr. Probasco was approachable, and I would encourage his confirmation to this appointment to the Board of Game. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person there at the Kodiak LIO is Sam Rohrer. Sam, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sam Rohrer. I am the president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, and I will be testifying on their behalf this afternoon. APHA supports Mr. Probasco's appointment to the Board of Game. I, as well, was in the Sitka meetings and watched Mr. Probasco at his first meeting. I thought he did a good job, and I was impressed with him. Mr. Probasco has demonstrated himself to be a thoughtful board member. He's willing to listen to all sides of an issue before taking a position. We appreciate his service and his willingness to serve again, and we support his appointment to the Board of GAIN. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. There's a third person there at the Kodiak LIO, Jason Bunch. Mr. Bunch?
Good afternoon. My name is Jason Bunch. I'm a registered guide on Kodiak Island as well as an active duty Coast Guardsman. I do not know Mr. Probasco personally. However, he has maintained a reputable name so far in his service. I appreciate and thank him for his time, and I support his confirmation to the Board of GAIN. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Bunch. Let's see. Next at the Sitka LIO is Brad Dennison. Mr. Dennison?
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, very clearly.
My name is Brad Dennison. I'll be testifying for myself. My wife and I have lived in Sitka for 39 years, and I've hunted the state the entire time we've lived here. I support the confirmation of Pete Probasco also. I was at the Sitka Board of GAIN meeting. His would have been his first meeting. I believe he has a genuine concern for the resource. He's thoughtful and hardworking and appears to be fair. He's also a good communicator. He's easy to approach. He's easy to understand, and he works well with the other board members. I encourage you to confirm his seat. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dennison, for your testimony. Last person for this appointee is Dan Montgomery in Wasilla. Mr. Montgomery, are you there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am. My name is Dan Montgomery. I live in Wasilla. I've been a 31-year resident of Alaska, and I also serve on the Mat Valley AC as vice chair, and I would like to support Pete Probasco. He's been a thoughtful and board member. I've been at the two meetings in Region 2 and Region 4, and he's good at explaining his decisions. He's very thoughtful when he makes those decisions. He has a good understanding of our populations of game and the hunting regulations, and very respectful to people and very approachable, and I believe he's an asset to the board, and I support his reappointment. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Montgomery, for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room or on the phone that would like to testify on the appointment of Mr. Probasco to the Board of GAIN? Okay, seeing no one, we'll close that public testimony. And, oh, there is someone else. There's another sign-up sheet appearing. Okay, so is there, there's a couple names here in the room. Either of you would like to testify on this appointment? No. Okay, so that we'll hold that for the next person. Okay, great. So thank you very much, Mr. Probasco, for making time to talk with us. We're going to interview the next appointee now, and we'll be forwarding your names. Of course, this will come before the legislature on Monday. So thank you very much for your willingness to serve. Okay, the next person that we are interviewing today is Mr. Nathan Turner. Mr. Turner, can you hear us? Is he online? He is. Great. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Welcome. So if you would introduce yourself to us, just tell us a little bit about your background, why you're interested in serving on the Board of Game, and special interests that you might have.
Okay, I'd be happy to. I do have a quick question. Do you have my biography that I'd written 3 years ago, actually, for my first opportunity to serve on this board? Do you have that information in front of you, or should I address my background a little bit?
I am told that we do. I don't particularly see it in my binder. Oh, yes, here it is. Yes, I see it here. It looks like other board members have it as well. Your application, and it's a rather extensive biography that you've written. So, yes, we do have it. Thank you.
Okay. I'll briefly address a little bit of that I'll primarily address my interest in serving on the board, and some of that will be covered at the same time.
Great.
I was originally asked to put my name in for the Board of Game seat several years ago by several different people. I believe largely due to my subsistence background and as well as my experience as a registered big game guide. I've made my entire living for the last 23 years from the resources that the land provides, whether through commercial or subsistence fishing, trapping, guiding, or log home building. I'm currently the only Board of Game member who depends entirely on our wildlife populations for their primary means of living, and the only active hunting guide who's been on this board for a good number of years now. There are a couple other members, or actually one other member that holds a guide license, but he hasn't been active in quite a long time. It's been a rewarding experience for me to work with the other board members to navigate through the sometimes complex and very often controversial issues that we have to deal with. It's been a growing experience for me. I've spent most of my life out in the woods, and while I do believe that natural observation has its place, the science that this board is using to come to the decisions that we have to, or I should say the good data and good science that's put before us to help inform our decisions, has really been really fun to have opportunity to review and to learn. My notes are a little scribbled here, so I'll move on to the next point. Something that really stands out in my memory of these last 3 years on the board is the number of times the genuine appreciation that's been expressed by Alaskans across the state for the efforts that our current board has put forward to maintain or even enhance hunting and trapping opportunities at every opportunity. I've even seen people with tears in their eyes, and that's not something that you easily forget. And it's important to me that some of the old views of Alaska and the old traditional uses have a means to, or that people want to partake in these uses have the opportunity in the future. And that's something that's really important to me. When we first came to Alaska, we were introduced to some of these older ways, like, for example, on my trap lines, the gentlemen's agreements and the rights that how trappers can be scattered across the country and share the land with one another without conflict. Those are old, long-established rules of conduct that are still going, and there's still people out in the woods doing this stuff. And my family's really been blessed to be able to do it, and I'd like to help in any way that I can to make sure that these opportunities are there for future generations as well.
Very good. Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Turner? Yes, Senator Dyson has a question.
Yeah, thanks. I was intrigued that you said you're the only active guide on the board. Can you give me a quick survey of what are the professions or ways of making a living of the other guys, the other people?
Yes. Starting at the top, I guess, it would be Ted Spraker. He's the current chairman of the board. He's a retired biologist, 28 years working for the state. And he's been on the board game now for, I think he's 10th or 11th year, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't need all the details. Just tell me what they do for a living, please.
Oh, okay. Yeah, very good. Stosh Hoffman is out in Bethel. He works with a Native corporation out there. I don't remember exactly in what capacity, and he has some private businesses of his own. Bob Mumford is a retired law enforcement officer in the state of Alaska. Teresa Sager-Alba works with a company with several capacities, actually, out in the Tok area. Pete, of course, has just identified himself. And Nick Yurko is involved in the tourism business and wildlife viewing and stuff like that with aviation related in the southeast. And I'm a little flustered here. I don't believe I'm forgetting anybody.
All right. That's sufficient. I have an interesting letter here that from Tina Brown, who says you have an obvious conflict of interest. Is that because you're a big game hunter, do you suppose?
I'm not sure what she's referencing. I've actually spoken with her in the past. This was a couple of years ago now, I guess. I don't know what she means without further explanation, but I guess I would assume that's what she's inferring. Maybe perhaps because I do depend on wildlife for my living. My entire living has been wildlife dependent, actually, in Alaska.
All right. So thank you.
That must be what she's speaking of.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Further questions? Senator French has some questions for you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Turner, there was a Board of Game hearing not too long ago in Sitka, and there was some suggestion that, or a proposal in front of the board to allow residents of Alaska open a earlier season opener than non-residents get, so they could go out and hunt moose, hunt caribou, and so forth before non-residents. Do you remember that proposal?
I do. Actually, there was a series of I believe nine proposals that came together as a group. Yes.
And I don't know what happened there, except for something that was given to me from an Alaska Dispatch article. And I'll just read the paragraph that involves you, and then you can respond to it. It said, board member Nathan Turner from Nenana, a rural community in the interior of Alaska, observed that there are significant parts of the state where non-residents are about the only hunters. Those hunters, he added, help support jobs in the Alaska guide businesses and provide the state a big chunk of change for wildlife conservation in the form of high fees paid for non-resident tags and permits. Is that more or less a synopsis of your position on the proposal?
It's a good synopsis of it, yes.
Okay. And then I think the reason why some folks ask whether you understand your conflict of interest is, as a big game guide and as a person who would take non-resident hunters out into the field, when you were asked if any of your votes on matters that came before the board might affect you or a member of your family financially, you answered no on the form that I have here that came with your application.
Yes. If you'd like me to address that, I'd be happy to.
Please.
The topics that when this issue came up in the Southeast, it was particularly for the Southeast units. All of the proposals addressed units 1 through 5 or maybe 6, I don't remember at the moment. I have no financial interest in those regions at all. I've never guided there, never intend to. The proposals only address that region. That would be the short answer. I could go into it more if you'd like me to.
Well, I think it'd probably be good, at least for me, if you did, if we have a few minutes. It strikes me that earlier in the article, and I guess I'll take you at your word that those proposals were strictly about Southeast, but earlier in the article it said that board members thought a statewide preference went too far. So it implied, at least to me, that there were other parts of the state up for that proposal. But nevertheless, you can see how a question like that, if it were applied to an area where you trap or where you hunt or where you guide clients, might affect you financially.
Yes, absolutely. That's something I'm very cognizant of. I think any other board member and the majority of the public would agree that I've been very careful to recuse myself of any situation that would even hint of benefiting myself in any way financially. There's even been a number of proposals that have come up addressing, like I remember the Unit 9, for example. We created a community permit system to allow the harvest of brown bears out of the normal hunting seasons to address the local villagers' concerns for safety and several other factors, and they had nothing to do with guiding at all. But I realized that somebody could say, well, you know, Mr. Turner could potentially, if he voted against this, then he would probably be looking out for his own interest, because then there would be more bears on the peninsula, and very indirectly could come back and benefit me somehow. I asked the chairman at the time that I could be recused from the vote on that, and Mr. Judkins, who was the chair at the time, he said, I don't see a reason for conflict. But I told him I felt convicted that I should step down to even avoid the appearance of impropriety. And that's how I've done my best to apply this throughout the state on all of these issues as they come up. My comments directly in reference to how Well, actually, I'll go back. I've never made a comment whether I thought these proposals should be taken up on a statewide level versus a local level or vice versa. Other board members have. I haven't weighed in on that opinion. Most of the time when we've talked about this suite of proposals, as we've come to call it, the same types of proposals by the same authors in several areas of the state, I think they may have been in front of us 3 to 4 times at this cycle, and I sat out on the majority of those times because they did address areas that or regions even that I either guide in or work for somebody that does guide in. And my comment about how it could have a negative impact on state wildlife management, I think that's generally true, and it has nothing to do with my own personal financial interest. But, you know, it's commonly known that non-resident hunting provides for about 70% of the funding through direct payment and Pittman-Robertson funds for wildlife management in Alaska. It's a very important aspect of funding our programs. That's a very long answer. I don't know if you were looking for that either.
No, that's completely fair, and I'm glad you took a few minutes to explain your position. I'll just close by saying that the conflict of interest statement, though, the one you answered, was really prospective, not retrospective. It's prospective. Could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions to be made by the board or commission for which you're applying? And I think if you were to answer that question again today, well tell me, how would you answer it now, today?
None of the decisions I've made have led to or did I foresee any way that I would benefit from them in the future.
Yeah, Mr. Turner, I don't mean to belabor the point, but that's not how it reads. It doesn't read, have you made decisions that affected you? It's prospective. Could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions to be made by the board or commission for which you're applying?
Yes, and we're asked to. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was
asked
finished.
To identify.
I think
there's a delay here. We're asked to identify what those decisions would be or could be in reference to the proposals that are in front of us, and that's how I proactively do it at every meeting. We review and study these proposals in great depth before the meetings, and if I foresee, if you will, any hint of economic advantage or disadvantage to me, I try to recuse myself from them if I can identify them in time. I've caught myself in the middle of meetings even catching onto a nuance to the proposal that I never anticipated, and as it started to turn down that road, I stopped the meeting and asked to be recused from decisions based on those factors. I'm doing my best. I can promise you I will continue to.
Thank you very much, Mr. Turner. Mr. Turner, Senator Machicki also has a question for you.
Hello, Mr. Turner. I appreciate the fact that you're saying that your actions will keep you from having a conflict. I do agree with Senator French that probably a yes is a better answer, but I do appreciate the way you operate. I also appreciate, just like the Board of Fish, I have a lot more experience with it, and I like the fact that there are sport and commercial fishermen and guides on that board. I think it's imperative that we have folks that sort of know the lay of the land from all the different ways that the board can be affected, and it sounds like you are very cognizant and careful about when you have a conflict. I was very impressed by reading your biography. I moved up here probably about the same age you did, had the same dream, and I got sucked into the city and stayed there, unfortunately. So I'm kind of a little envious that you actually lived that life, but I think it's great experience for the board, and I've heard from folks I respect very much, Mr. Turner, that you're a great candidate to continue.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. I have 7 folks who are online who would like to testify concerning the appointment of Mr. Turner. So I'll start at the Fairbanks LIO with Al Barrett. Mr. Barrett, are you there?
Oh, yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Great. Go ahead and give your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Al Barrett. I reside in Fairbanks. I will be representing the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, which I'm the vice chair of. Most of our Fairbanks
FAC members enjoyed an opportunity to work with Mr. Turner and watch him grow his last term as a board member. And what we really like is he attends AC meetings. We do feel that's very important to us, and while he's there, he explains what board actions were taken and some background reasoning on why the board took action the way they did. We believe he's honest and he's got high integrity. Some other things that are really important to our AC that we really like is we believe Mr. Turner reads all the AC comments that are put forth in front of him, and he readily refers to AC comments to proposals when they're at when that topic is up, and he'll put it on a record or make a comment that this AC or that AC is interested or had made comments. So we just ask that you approve Mr. Turner for confirmation, or approve his confirmation, and appoint him to the board again. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. Next, I'll go to the off-net. Someone in Anchorage named Lyle Becker. Mr. Becker, can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So if you would just identify yourself for the record, and then 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lyle Becker. I'm also a registered guide, and I'm a board member of the South Central Chapter of the Alaska Trappers Association. And I'm calling to support Nate's appointment to the board. In all my interactions with him, I found him to be incredibly level-headed, a very even-keeled personality, and he's always been very willing to openly respond to any inquiry that I've ever put to him. And he appears to be a very everything-on-top-of-the-table type of person. And with that, I would conclude that I just want to throw my support behind him.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Becker, for your testimony. Next, we'll go to the Kodiak LIO. And Dick Rohrer is on line there in Kodiak. Mr. Rohrer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Resource Committee, my name is Dick Rohrer. I came to Alaska now almost 50 years ago. Hunter, fisherman, been a member of the Kodiak Advisory Board in years past, attended many Board of Game meetings. Have known Mr. Turner for a number of years. I know Nate to be a man of integrity, honesty. He's approachable as a board member. I think that he brings a unique experience to the board with his lifestyle, experience in trapping, subsistence, sport hunting, certainly knowledge of the guide industry as well. I observed Nate when he was first appointed to the board, and like I mentioned with Mr. Probasco early on, he was reserved, quiet, listened, learned the process more fully than what he knew going in. He listens carefully to public testimony and to the department testimony. I've heard him ask good questions. He's attentive, never aggressive, doesn't put a person down that he may not agree with. And so I give high marks to Nate in his performance. Certainly support his confirmation as reappointment to the board. I might add that Nate has not always voted in the way that I would have liked him to, but because of careful, honest consideration of all the issues, he makes a good decision, and I support that, and I support him fully.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Rohrer. Next at the Kodiak LIO is Sam Rohrer. Sam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sam Rohrer. I'm the president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, and I will be testifying on their behalf this afternoon. APHA strongly supports Nate Turner's appointment to the Board of Game. As you know, it's challenging to find a person who's able to successfully navigate the complex and often contentious issues that the Board of Game process presents. An effective board member must be willing to weigh all sides of a proposal while carefully considering its biological and allocative implications. They must always approach a process with an open mind. And over the last 3 years, Mr. Turner has proven himself to be just such a board member. Mr. Turner has demonstrated a willingness to look closely at all sides of an issue and to carefully consider the views of interested parties before reaching a position on any given issue. all while taking time and care to put the long-term health of the resource first. In addition, Mr. Turner's extensive backcountry experience as a full-time trapper, hunting guide, and subsistence hunter puts him in a unique position to relate to the various user groups who bring issues before the board. For this reason, it's APHA's opinion that Mr. Turner is the right person for the job. We highly recommend that you confirm his reappointment to the Board of Game. And on a personal note, I'd like to say I've spent quite a bit of time out in the field guiding with Nate, and I've found him to be an excellent woodsman and a true conservationist. So we support him and would appreciate your confirmation.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Rohr. Next at the LIO there in Kodiak is Jason Bunch. Mr. Bunch?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jason Bunch from Kodiak. I've had the opportunity to work with Mr. Turner on various subcommittees. He is an exceptional mentor who possesses an unwilling desire to do what is best for Alaska and Alaskans' resources. He is honest and he is humble. He has consistently shown an open mind during discussion groups concerning issues at hand. As a board member, he truly defines Alaska and many of the issues brought before the board. I support his reconfirmation to the Board of Game. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bunch. Next, we'll go to the Sitka LIO. Brad Dennison is there. Mr. Dennison?
Thank you. My name again is Brad Dennison, and I'll testify for myself. I've been a resident of Sitka since 1974, and I support Nate Turner to retain his seat on the Board of Game. I've personally known Nate for quite a few years now, and like Mr. Probasco, Nate has a genuine concern for the resources of the state, and he's hardworking and he's fair. On the Board of Game, he's always one of the ones asking the right questions to bring enough information to the board so a fair and a reasonable decision can be made. He also works well, very well with the public and other board members, very easy to approach, good communicator. And so I'd encourage you to confirm Nate to the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dennison. There's one last person signed up to testify in Wasilla. His name is Dan Montgomery. Mr. Montgomery, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to testify. My name is Dan Montgomery. I'm a guide, a master guide. I've been living in Alaska for 31 years. I also serve on the Mat Valley Advisory Committee. I'm vice chair of game on that committee. I support Nate Turner to be reappointed to the board. He has been an exceptional board member over the last 3 years he's served on the board. He researches the proposals thoroughly and explains his decisions thoroughly and is very fair and ethical in those decisions. Anytime he has had a conflict of interest of any sort where it just even hinted of one, he's recused himself. I've been to all the meetings for Region 2 and Region 4 in the last since 2007, excuse me, and Mr. Turner has always recused himself whenever there was even a hint where it might be a conflict of interest, where it might concern non-resident allocation versus resident allocation for guiding, and I strongly support his nomination, and he's a very ethical and fair man, and he makes an excellent board member. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Montgomery, for your testimony. There are two folks signed up here in the room. Thor Stacy, did you wish to testify? No. And Tina Brown, did you wish to testify? All right, great. Anyone else in the room or on the phone who wishes to testify? The answer is no. Very good. So we'll close public testimony on the appointment of Mr. Turner. So at this time, that concludes our appointee list for today. In accordance with AS 3905080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Board of Game, Peter Probasco, Nathan Turner. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. So at this time, I'll pass this transmittal document around. We'll take a brief at ease. By the way, thank you, gentlemen, Mr. Probasco and Mr. Turner, for your willingness to serve. We'll come back on the record. So our next item of business is Senate Bill 96, Oil and Gas Only Leases. This is a bill sponsored by Senator Michicki. And Senator, I see that you have your aide, Mr. Semmons, here. Will he be presenting the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right, I'll have you come forward, Mr. Semmons, and introduce yourself for the record and present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to speak today. My name is Larry Simmons. I'm a legislative aide for Senator Michicki. I'm diligently working on trying to finish my on-the-job training checklist for this session by presenting this bill to you today. Senate Bill 96 proposes to allow the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources to extend oil and gas leases and gas-only leases on a one-time basis to allow a leaseholder additional time to develop and get a lease productive. The Department of Natural Resources is in support of the bill, and there's also industry support. The bill has a zero fiscal note. The problem that this bill will fix is that we have shorter term leases, 5-year and 7-year leases, that have been issued, and there are situations where these leases should be extended. However, there's no statutory authority to extend the leases. Oil and gas leases or gas-only leases do not expire as long as they are producing or if the leased land is part of a unit that is producing. Otherwise, the lease term is limited to the initial term. Senate Bill 96 will provide the statutory authorization to extend the lease if it's in the best interest of the state to do so. We have Bill Barron, the Director of Division of Oil and Gas, with us here today to make a short presentation on the bill. I think he'll be the best person to answer questions on the bill. However, I'm willing to answer your questions to the best of my ability. Thank you very much for consideration of this important legislation on behalf of Senator Michicki, the sponsor.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Simmons. So if Mr. Bill Barron would come forward, Director of Division of Oil and Gas, that would be great. And I think that presentation is in our packet.
Is there a mouse somewhere?
Oh, it's on the pad. Mm. Never mind. Silly me.
What's that?
That was okay.
It's not responding.
Give it 5 seconds.
We'll take a brief at ease while... All right, we're back on the record.
For the record, I'm Bill Barron, and I'm the Director of Oil and Gas for the State of Alaska, and I want to thank the chair and the sponsor for giving me the opportunity to kind of go through a little bit more detail of this bill. Larry did a really good job of introducing it. Again, the whole point is this is an area where the statutes are a bit remiss in our ability to manage state land. There is no way to extend a lease out of its primary term other than through active drilling, part of a unit or part of production. There are opportunities where short-term leases, leases that the division had issued several years ago, which were five-year terms or seven-year terms. Companies have been diligently trying to work those leases and have come up to the brink of their term and have yet been able to drill a well or to prove hydrocarbon. And rather than having them release that acreage just to go back into a lease sale and take the risk of not being the party to pick it up, they tend to bring forward unit applications which aren't necessarily fully mature. So we get into this dialogue of, is it a unit, is it not a unit, should it be, how do you resolve that, where a simple 1, 2, or 3 year extension would have given them that ability to drill those wells and to prove up their acreage in a much more timely manner. I think what is really important is this has got to be based, the decisions by the commissioner are very fundamentally based on not work that is going to be planned to be done. The first step in the door is what work have you done on those leases. So this is not about warehousing. This is counter to that. This is an opportunity for the commissioner to look over the history of the lease or leases that the company is asking for an extension of and asking that very hard question, what have you done in the term that you've had it? If the answer is little to none, it's going to be kind of a tough uphill battle for him to get past step one. Step two in this process is that they are buying a premium. They're buying an option in order for us to manage our state land. At this juncture, the commission can very clearly lean back in and require a performance bond, require a work commitment, and identify the types of work and the funds for those works for that extension. And this is now a contractual negotiation of a term. This is really one of the opportunities that a lot of times we do not have the opportunity to talk to companies about the work scope, the funds, the timing that they have in a primary term. This would be the first opportunity that the state would actually be able to engage the companies in a very upfront manner in terms of, you want the extension, what are you going to do? And put in terms and conditions that if they don't meet those established contractual obligations, then the leases would then expire. Some of the background Larry's already covered, and I just briefly hit as well. So what's the magnitude of the problem? The slide you have in front of you now is for the northern Alaskan. So this is North Slope, Foothills, Beaufort Sea, all combined into one. The first grouping is leases that are going to expire within the next 2 years, the next 2 to 5 years, and then outside of 5 years. So in the first category, you've got 104 leases across the North Slope, and it is a polyphony of companies. Everybody's got kind of the same problem. Clearly, there's ones that have more problems than others, but again, this is not about any one company. This is recognizing that there's 104 leases out there that somebody's going to try and work. For example, Repsol and AVG are currently active trying to work some of these leases, but it's kind of one of those things that they got into some of this as a acquisition of time, and as hard as they're working, they're running into a time clock. So this is kind of the game that we're trying to solve, and because we don't want the lease to just come back to the lease sale, because these guys are working hard to develop those acreage.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator French.
It's probably worth it, though. I mean, just while we're here on the slide, it's hard to miss Repsol sort of standing head and shoulders above every other oil company working on the North Slope as having leases that are going to expire in 2 years. Can you comment on that? I mean, it's that's a lot of leases.
Through the chair, absolutely, Senator French. Repsol stepped in a couple of years ago to acquire some of the acreage in joint cooperation with Armstrong. And they recognized very clearly that they were under the gun and aggressively approached the opportunity immediately, within the first drilling season, got a rig up, started processing drilling activity. So they are the kind of company that is actually really trying to drive and recognize the time frame. But in recognition of that, we shouldn't be putting ourselves in a position to hurt them later. Clearly, Repsol and AVG are kind of the first two candidates in the out years, the years that where we had seven-year leases, clearly the big player there would be Great Bear relative to the shale play. So that's also kind of the issue is we've got some outliers in the out years that we will be able to address as well. But to your point, yeah, Repsol is a very interesting case, and they're a case that came in not in the primary lease activity, but secondary to the testament of their ability to get going and prove up acreage as quickly as possible. Gives them a continued operation. They've got the understanding, they've got the knowledge, they've got the rigs under contract. That's the kind of game that we're trying to make sure is played out correctly. Same thing in the Cook Inlet. Clearly, through the chair, Senator French's question, the one that pops up the most is clearly Apache. Apache did very similar activities that Repsol did with other companies in the Cook Inlet and bought a great large area of acreage scattered across the western side and the eastern side of Cook Inlet. So it's not necessarily all contiguous. It's kind of scattered, which is good. But some of their acreage is clearly coming up short in terms of time. And, these are the kind of players that we also want to encourage. But, again, as the acreage is more diverse, the challenge for the division and for the company is to clearly understand what work have you done on that lease, not in totality of all your leases. What this is not, and I want to be real clear about this, is not going to be I need two more years to shoot seismic. This is about I need two more years to get a well drilled, or I need another drilling season to get a well drilled. You don't need to have the acreage to shoot seismic in the state of Alaska. And I think that's really important for the committee to appreciate, because the commissioner and the division clearly have that appreciation. And this is about getting a work program established and committed to drill wells and to advance the technology and understanding of the state, of its resources, and to bring resources to market as quickly as possible.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Machicki.
And I, just to be clear, my interest in the bill, our interest in the bill, the three top prospects for getting gas to market in Cook Inlet is Apache, Buccaneer, and Hillcorp, and they all have a large number of leases that are coming up against that less than two-year deadline, and we certainly want to encourage them to hopefully get some gas to market as soon as possible without starting over.
Through the chair, we actually are in total concert with that, and this is kind of why. We just don't want people that have diligently been trying to progress the lease to have to release it to try and get it back. But there's also a balance that we have to recognize in the general business practice of lease sales. There were some companies, and still are. There's dialogue about this. There has been dialogue for well over a year in this whole process. Some companies are concerned that if it's not managed correctly, it could be seen as a way for people to hold acreage just to hold it out a little bit longer. And because some of these companies it's a competitive market. And some of these companies know the geology as well as some of the other companies, and they are waiting for some of these leases to expire so they can bid on them and try and get them in the next bid round. We understand that. We appreciate that. But we also want to make sure that people and the state is benefited by the people who have the current lease. If they're doing work, if they have actually spent time managing that property well, we believe a five-year lease and a seven-year lease, if there was issues on timing, on weather, on rigs, on equipment, whatever the problems were, that we have an opportunity to listen to their story and then firm up a strong contractual deal to make them drill wells with bonding, with committed work programs, with elevated rentals if they don't do work, et cetera. These aren't shalls, these are maize and mites, but the clear intent is for us to form a new contractual business relationship with these companies for the next year or two if we give them those extensions. And again, the extensions are not guaranteed. A five-year lease does not automatically get a five-year extension, making it 10 years. It depends on the case. And there's many, many cases that it's almost infinite in terms of the number of stories we're going to get of how many times the dog ate the homework. But the real issue that we've got here is that, dependent upon the story and dependent upon the committed work program, we might give them a five-year extension with one-year gates. First year you have to do X, second year Y, third year Z. And if you don't meet any of those, or if you miss any of them along the way, the contract may say the leases automatically expire. So this is an opportunity for the state to really engage with the industry in a very positive way to encourage development. we're kind of excited about it. This is a real important issue for the division. So who benefits? The industry benefits because this does allow for the accommodation of shorter drilling windows and gives people more time if they've been diligently working. And it benefits the state because it is the first time we can require a work program, encourages the work that's ongoing to be completed, which I think is very important, and it really increases the probability of leases being brought on to production quicker. I'm open for any questions.
Very good. Questions? Senator French.
Madam Chair, Director, I want to thank you for stopping by my office earlier today. I appreciate that time. It helps me get up to speed ahead of the hearing. We discussed this a little bit in my office, and I'll just say there's some folks who think, and I guess I'm one of them, that we should have something like this set up in the first 5 years. I know that's not the philosophy of the state right now, but it just strikes me that having a firm set of work commitments earlier rather than later would benefit everybody. That's not the bill in front of us, and I'll set that point aside. Let me ask you this. There's 60 some odd Repsol leases coming up soon. Is that going to be a lease by lease decision, or would you just say, well, we really like Repsol, they got a lot of money, let's give them a break?
Through the chair, Senator French, great question, and that's a question that's going to be, regardless of which company it is, that's going to be the question du jour. Our clear intent is to require the companies to come in and explain what they've been doing on the leases. And there will be, some of these will be, I anticipate, will be bundled. They will identify blocks of leases that are contiguous and say, this is the work activity we've been doing on this area. Or it could be, here's package A, package B, and package C, and describe what they've been doing or haven't been doing in relative to other packages. I can see where we would be able to manage that in a negotiated settlement, saying package A gets 1 year and here's your work commitment, package two is denied, and package three gets some other unique design. So it's really, we're trying to let's ask ourselves the question about Great Bear. Great Bear is one that would also come to mind. 500,000 acres, ununitized acreage of shale. It is going to be very interesting to see.
If I can just interject, how many individual leases are there within that huge swath of property?
Several hundreds.
Okay. Because they can't be more than 5,000, roughly, per lease, right?
Right.
Okay.
And actually, last year, we quarter-sectioned them for reasons associated with shale development. So what we would be asking a company like Great Bear or Royal, who's in a very similar position, of course, Royal has got 10-year leases, so they wouldn't even apply. Excuse me for that. We would be asking the company, you started along the highway, which is good, smart, well-reasoned activity. What are you going to do for the fringe edge at the end? What have you done out there? And if the answer is, well, we're going to get to it in 5 years, we're going to have difficulty getting there. And I can't say that that's going to be the official stand, because in 5 years, they might have progressed a great deal of work for that effort. But if they were to come in today, it would be a hard road for them to hold. It'd be a high hurdle.
And let me just follow up on that, if I could, Madam Chair. And let's just say Great Bear, for example, probably a good example, doesn't do, you know, for whatever reason, another year goes by, they haven't done much, and suddenly they find some bigger company that wants to buy those leases. And they come in and buy those leases. My view is that second company should start and stand in the shoes of Great Bear. Great Bear was dilatory for a year. This new company, despite their best intentions, besides their, you know, their deep pockets, they've come, you know, they've decided to buy leases that are expiring. And so I guess, I mean, that seems to me like a real tough case for you to decide, because you've suddenly got a new player with a lot of money on leases that are expiring. How do you see that playing out? And I'm glad it's you and not me answering that question.
Through the chair, Senator French, again, that's actually a very simple question for me to answer. This is a very intelligent, sophisticated industry. When a company comes in and buys acreage in a conjunction with somebody who already owns that lease, they know what the rules are. They know what the contractual obligations are. They know what the contractual time is. They step in their shoes. They've just changed tasks. To me, it does not matter. If they don't action activities associated within that given time frame, not my problem. My problem is to make sure that the lease is either worked or returned so I can lease it to somebody else.
and I appreciate that, especially given the shifting sort of ownership structures you can imagine, where you know one owner decides, well, I'm just going to create a new oil company to buy these leases for me, and suddenly I get five more years because it looks like a new operation. It may not be. It's hard to say.
And through the chair, Senator French, Repsol is a good example of somebody who did buy in, recognized what the rules were, and progressed as quickly as they possibly could. Good example of counter to
hurried a rig up there. They had a blowout. They had some bad luck. You know, it strikes me that those are the sort of the easy cases where you have a company that's almost through force majeure, you know, run into problems they just cannot overcome. So those will be easier. Let me just ask about you, and I'm sure got the letter from Apache that the rest of the committee got, and they raised two concerns: one about the performance bond, one about the $250 an acre. How many leases in general would a $250 per acre charge be sort of out of bounds, be above what was paid in the first place? Is that
through the chair, Senator French? The $250, let me give you a little bit of history with that. The $250 uplift in years 8, 9, and 10 are the current lease terms throughout most of the state for state lands. That was introduced 2 years ago with a perspective of our entry level on leases right now is $25 an acre, very low. And prior to that, a lot of the acreage that we're talking about here is now at about $3 an acre. So very low entry price. I think it's important for the committee to understand that our appreciation of this is the companies, again, are sophisticated. They know how to make business decisions. Our perspective on this is if they have not been diligently progressing land for 7 years, they have a business choice to make. Either recognize that in the last 3 years, your cost to do business, to hold that land as an exclusive right, is going to go up to $250 an acre, or relinquish it, put it back to the lease sale, and let me manage it back through the lease sale process. I understand that one company has leaned in and said it should only be 150%. To me, 100, and we thought about that in the division, and 150% of $3 an acre really doesn't give me the warm comfort that I need from a business negotiating standpoint, that they still may not really be serious about moving the land. That's why. And it is clearly the discretion of the commissioner. If the company had been doing work, he has the authority to waive that $250 and keep it at the original lease rate. I mean, this is all predicated on work that has been performed. I know that there's other comments and concerns about a required work program. This is something, again, if a company wants an extension, they are asking for an option to hold land exclusively. There should be something there that is back to the state. If they want that luxury to have that land for an extended period of time, what's in it for the state? The state needs to get wells drilled if they're going to hold the acreage longer. To me, this is a very simple business philosophy. And that's the way the division is looking at it, and that's why how the division is going to manage it. This is a business philosophy to get wells drilled.
Thanks. Senator Michiki had a question.
Just an important thing, if it wasn't made clear, and I think Senator French knows this, but the lease extension is to the primary terms up to 5 years, but there's a total primary period of lease and extension not to exceed 10 years. So they couldn't receive another 5 years. They can only receive a total of 10 years.
Through the chair, Senator Sponsor, that is absolutely a critical piece. We, in working with your staff, very clearly wanted to make sure that at no time did any of the primary terms exceed 10 years. And we made it so that there could only be one and only one extension. So somebody couldn't come in and get an extension and then come back, my kid took the homework to school and didn't bring it back to me. I need another extension. No, I'm sorry. This is a business arrangement. You get one bite.
Just to follow up.
Very good. Follow up, Senator McGee?
I just think that's imperative for Alaskans to understand, too. Many are concerned with leases that have languished but are still under control, and this really is about getting them to work and producing hydrocarbons for the state. It's not about a land-holding program.
Through the chair, yes, sir, absolutely.
Very good. Further questions for Mr. Barron? All right. We have Lisa Parker on the line. So, Ms. Parker, can you hear us?
Yes, Senator. Can you hear me?
Very clearly. Go ahead and give your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Parker, and I am the manager of government relations for Apache Corporation, and I am a resident of Soldotna, Alaska. I want to start first by thanking Senator McChicky for introducing this legislation and working with not only Apache but the administration in moving this forward. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 96. This bill would allow the commissioner to extend the term of oil and gas leases or gas-only leases beyond the original primary term. The legislation offers an alternative to last-minute rushes to create units, propose placement of rigs, or other lease-saving operations that would allow an operator to hold its oil and gas leases. The Department of Natural Resources has seen this done on a repeated basis using valuable time while a company continues to hold the unit or oil and gas leases while requesting further extensions with no actual work actually being performed on the leases or the unit. Apache is in general supportive of this legislation. As a new operator in Alaska, we have acquired a significant amount of acreage which has leases that will expire before we're able to complete our seismic exploration activities, which help us delineate what, if any, potential oil and gas resources are under our leases. Since entering Cook Inlet in the fall of 2010, Apache has been aggressive in exploration and development efforts. Apache has and continues to find new and innovative ways to conduct seismic so as to create only the slightest disturbance while gathering good quality data. We've employed a cutting-edge technology that in 2012 resulted in acquiring seismic on over 200,000 acres within the Cook Inlet Basin. We also, in late 2011, spudded our first well on the west side of Cook Inlet. There's still a lot of work left to do, and in working with the department, Apache is hopeful that it will have the opportunity to continue its 3D seismic program to better identify the potential of the Cook Inlet Basin. And in our letter, and it has been discussed by the committee already, are some of the proposed changes that we would suggest. In closing, I'd like to say that Apache's general manager, John Hendricks, has stated on numerous occasions, Apache does not sit on its assets. We want the opportunity to delineate those assets before beginning exploration efforts. This is why we have worked with Senator McChicky and the administration on this issue. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Are there any questions from committee members for Ms. Parker? All right. Anyone else in the room or on the phone who wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, thank you. We'll close public testimony. I do note that there are a couple folks from Division of Oil and Gas, but they're available for questions only if Mr. Behrens needed them, and he did quite well without them.
No, I don't.
Any further questions from committee members? Senator French.
You've got a minute, thanks. As we were listening to public testimony, this thought crossed my mind that it sounds like now the only way to extend a lease term really is to sort of go to unitization. That's a way sort of around the deadline of a lease. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator French, they can either go through unitization or be actively drilling.
Right. I guess I meant short of doing something productive.
they can process the application for unitization.
Sure. And it's tough to do if there hasn't been drilling because it doesn't look like you don't know what the unit looks like. But at least that's an avenue they pursue. And I guess I'm sure you've thought about this, but I'm sometime behind you in my thinking about this. But I can see how they'll come to you and say, "Well, let me have a unit." You'll say, "No, you can't have a unit." But maybe you should think about extending your leases. And so I think it's just going to be one more sort of negotiation, if you will, between the industry and the department.
Madam Chairman, through the chair, Senator French. We did think about that, and that's why the statute says that you have to come to the commissioner 180 days prior to the termination of your lease. So they kind of have to know. It's called planning. They kind of have to have an idea of where they are 180 days before it expires. That should give us the latitude of time. This is not one of these immediate, I'm a month out. I mean, this is half a year. come to me with a plan and a program.
And if I could, how many leases just get turned, just straight turned back to your department?
Through the chair, can you clarify?
How many leases do you have in which the owner operator of the lease just says, "Look, we're not even going to try. You can have it back. Here you go." How many can just come back?
Now it's for my lifeline. Sari Timmons, are you still on the line?
Ms. Timmons?
Yes, I am.
Sari, you worked up some numbers not too long ago about leases that were returned on the slope. Do you recall that?
Yes, and I'm sorry, Bill, I don't think I have those numbers right with me.
Just as a ballpark, I mean, did 10% come back? Did half of them come back? I mean, I'm going to guess it's a fairly small number.
It's a small number.
Okay.
Less than 10%, I would say, but we can follow up, Senator.
Yeah, and I can get the answer in the future. And I guess the last question I have is, and I know it's impossible to predict, but how often do you think that this tool will be used? Or in what percentage of leases do you think this will be a tool that you accept a good reason for extending? And when do you think you're going to say, nope, you've reached the end of the line?
Through the chair, really a speculative question, and it would give you a speculative answer. I would say a good 50% of the time somebody's going to come in and ask for an extension. There's clearly going to be places where they just go, I haven't done anything, and it's not going to be worth my time. Or if they come in, it's going to be a very short conversation.
Right, and I guess that was the second part was more what I was getting at. Is, I mean, how often do you actually think you guys will say yes to a request for an extension? And again, it's pure speculation, so I guess it's more about...
Through the chair, it will clearly depend on the quality of the applications.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Simmons, any closing remarks as carrier of the bill?
No, thank you for hearing the bill today, and thank you to the department for the excellent work that they've done, and appreciate hearing from the industry as well.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move SB 96 from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Thank you. Any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move from this committee to the next with its zero fiscal note. While we're signing those transmittal documents, I will comment that the Saturday meeting has been canceled for this committee. We'll meet again on Monday at 3:30. Thank you very much, everyone. We will adjourn. The time is 4:56 p.m.